All right, everybody, you're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we are so happy to have you listening to this great episode today. Hold on, I love this part.
You're flat.
Oh, yeah.
Coming
Tell
from
me all
me.
About
yeah,
it.
That's,
yeah.
That's embarrassing.
Tell me all about it. You play the bass. Is that an instrument?
Hey, man, I also play the scissors.
Shout out to
Noel
Gallagher's
band.
All right. We're so glad to
I got
have
cut.
You guys. Oh,
sorry,
yeah.
Just...
Oh.
Puns.
Puns today. Well, I mean, that's kind of apropos to have a little bit of comedy because we are talking to a big bunch of comedians here. It is a filmmaking collective. They are also – do you do like sketch comic collective? Would that be a good
– Yes. I would say that's pretty fair.
Yeah. Sketch and like film. We do.
Sketch and film.
Yeah.
Short and long. They are called Muscular Clown. They are making some really funny stuff, including The Street Wizard's Apprentice, which is – on YouTube right now. The entire series, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Entire series is up there. It's an award-winning series, correct?
Yeah.
Recently, yes.
Yeah.
And we're going to get into that. But for right now, we have, from Muscular Clown, Katie Johnston-Smith, Drew Creel, and Kyle Talley. Thank you so much for coming
thank
on the show.
You.
Hey,
thank
for
you,
man.
Us. Thank you.
All right, so let's start out with just, let's start at the beginning. Where did Muscular Clown kind of come from?
Kyle?
Yep. So... me and the other two of our members, Matt Giordano and Andrew Melzer, all went to high school together in Richmond, Virginia, and like started making like little just short comedy films in high school. And we then went to college, and Matt and Andrew went to SCAD, which is where Drew went.
Well, they met me.
And I went to a school in Virginia for acting, and they both went for filmmaking, and also all three of them went for filmmaking. And then after college, we kind of got together and worked on like two 48-hour film festival things, and then decided to start making shorts and sketches and stuff.
Yeah, maybe like a year or so, like a year and a half after college, we all decided to move up, living in different areas. I'm from Florida. You know, decided to move up to Chicago and get the team back together.
Yeah, get the band back together.
And try and do more sketch comedy, more web or just, you know, our medium's video, so we stuck to that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good place to be for sketch comedy. I mean, that's I feel like since I know the first time I really got into that, you know, video sketch comedy, watching SNL in the early 2000s, Andy Samberg and
absolutely.
The Lonely Island.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Just blew
oh, yeah.
It up.
Andy Samberg. And absolutely.
Them and Derek.
Derek Comedy, for sure. Those two were probably the inspiring groups that got us to think that, oh, yeah, we could try and do this thing, too. And, yeah, it's coming around.
Very cool. What are some
Hold on.
Yeah.
Kyle, do you want to give the...
why we're called Muscular?
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's important.
Origin story.
So, like, in like elementary school, this is very like super a la super bad, but like in elementary school, I really enjoyed drawing, but I couldn't draw very well, and so like I would draw like these superhero like really buff bodies like of like with spikes and like, you know, swords and stuff, and like I wasn't really good at drawing heads like real person heads, but clown heads were really easy to draw. So I just had like a bunch of like these clown like muscular like battle clown type drawings around my room, and that was like one of the contributing factors. I mean, one of the many contributing factors to my parents sending me to therapy at like a young age. And so like that kind of Andrew Melzer was looking through, we were looking through a bunch of like old journals, just kind of like screwing around. And he came upon like one of these drawings. He's like, what's this? And it was like, oh, well, this is that. And so
that'd be Muscular Clown.
Clown. Yeah,
exactly.
Pretty much.
Hold on. I got to write this down. Battle...
Could you throw Armada after that?
Yeah, Battle Clowns. Yeah. Well, that's season two.
Yeah,
yeah.
Okay.
Dear Netflix, do I have an idea for you? So I want to ask about, we mentioned the influence of Andy Samberg and Derek Comedy. How do you feel that you expand on the sketch comedy format, or where do you like to go with your version of sketch comedy in the video sense?
So I guess, you know, we're still pretty fresh to the scene, you know, even though we've been doing it for a long time. I would say being able to get in there and, you know, the difficulties of getting together and, you know, making films, it's definitely a struggle for us. But if we're ever, if there's something that we're trying to pioneer that's new or different, I would, you know, I would say just different. Everything's done. Everything's been done before. But we try our best to give a cinematic quality to the not, and I don't want to say that in like a, you know, Michael Bay or like a hyper clean looking or beautiful looking, but we just try to give sketch
lens
comedy.
Flares.
Yeah, we don't. No, there's no lens flares. There's no J.J. Abrams style cinematography. But we're just trying to give it a more of like a
clean.
Well, just more of a actual like arc.
Yeah,
a lot of sketch
saying.
Comedy has, you know, it's just like here's the joke, here's the one joke, and then that's the whole premise of the video is that joke. We try to give a little more of like an arc, a little more of like a journey through our skits and or sketches or what, however you want to say
I
that
don't
one.
Know. People who are mad about
sketches,
that don't,
skit
don't
comedy.
Have enough
yeah.
to be mad about.
we're not going to be stickling about it.
No. And so yeah, we try to give it a little more of a cinematic quality. I would say just on like a that narration level, or not narration, but just some little more of a story quality.
I would say that like definitely. One thing that we try to do in like writing is like almost any character could have a story like branch off about them if they are the smallest character in like it could be a guy just walking by and in our minds that guy has a big old arc to him and has like a reason he's there and very like I would kind of take like Venture Brothers as a like very big inspiration
okay.
in the sense of like
yeah definitely
every little character is as important as the big characters. Every piece of the puzzle needs to make sense and like fit.
So immersion is a very important part of the world that you're building.
Definitely,
yeah, definitely,
definitely.
Certainly for Street Wizard
commitment too,
because we've done a lot of like one off. Sketch videos that are just, you know, I would say that's what we were doing for the longest time until we decided, like, hey, let's try and do like an actual web series, like a contiguous show. But yeah, trying to really sell, like a world that even, you know, it can be really small. It's obviously they're small videos, they're like 5 minutes at most or what have you. But yeah, we try to just give more of a story quality, more immersion, as you said.
Yeah.
We also add like effects and like
sure.
Yeah,
yeah, there's
sure.
it yeah. I was going to say a lot of the videos that I've watched specifically Street Wizards Apprentice and the Todd's Going Away Party,
uh-huh.
yes. there's like a really great level of polish in the Going Away Party one. The episode I watched, it just I love the use of color. I love the use of really putting you into the moment. It doesn't seem, people think web YouTube videos are like some guy getting hit in the dick with like a playing, but this is like there's a lot of character. I love the premise of it, which is it's this guy's going away party, but mm-hmm. all the episodes have nothing to do with him. It's
yeah.
everybody else who's there.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I really like what you guys are doing. I wanted to know, what is it, a really collaborative process, or does everybody kind of fill a specific role?
I've just been super, super collaborative. So I guess I'll identify myself and Melzer as being the more like technical savvy. I think Matt Giordano, I don't want to discredit him. He's also very technically sound. But when it comes to who's doing the editing and the shooting, it's most of the time split between Melzer and myself. But when it comes to the creative, like, writing process, it's pretty much everybody all hands on deck. Mm-hmm. We're all going to spitball ideas at each other. We're going to try and work things out together. And then, you know, we'll get it to a point. We'll kind of, like, develop an idea that we're all, like, excited about and interested in. And then, you know, we'll hand it off to, you know, somebody to kind of, like, take it to the first draft level. And then we'll bring it back, review it, see how everybody, you know, thinks about it. So yeah, this, I would say it's heavily, very, very collaborative indeed.
Well, even in like in like the creation process, like, you know, people will have to, you know, Drew, like he says, he's definitely more behind the scenes stuff, but he will step in front of the camera, you know, in the same way that, you know, I'll have to run sound occasionally, or, you know, it when you're doing like, so quote unquote guerrilla filmmaking, you know, you have to, everybody has to wear different hats, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's, we run a pretty tight ship. It's like mostly just the five of us who get all the shit done. And that's kind of the way we like to do it, especially when we have no budget and we don't want to ask a bunch of people to work for us for no money.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good to have a collective of people that are of the same mind, of the same goal of just getting a bunch of ideas onto paper and then onto a platform for people to see.
Yes.
Speaking of getting a platform together and getting, you know, an idea together with your collective, specifically your series Street Wizard, I wanted to ask you a little bit how you guys came up with the idea of making a comedic, like, contemporary fantasy. Because that just sounds, just even saying that, it just sounds messy. And it's not. And the show is not. The
really?
Show is...
Okay, well, thank you. I would consider it messy. I actually tried to develop the idea on my own for a little while as a lengthier, I think it was always going to be some sort of series. I don't know if it was going to live on the web. But it was definitely more of like a lengthy, like, I was thinking closer to like 10 minutes long kind of thing per episode or whatever. But kind of, and I came to the idea just sort of like, was just trying to like, I was thinking, because I loved, you know, I loved Adventure Time and I love Venture Brothers specifically, and was just trying to think of like, okay, what's something that, you know, I find personally interesting, and then a very like, you know, everyday occurrence, something that people go through on a like everyday level, you know, the relatable meets the fantastic, and how can I mash those together?
Right.
And so, you know, like, I love drug dealers and wizards are real. So, you know, combine those two guys together and boom, you got a show, or at least I thought so. And yeah, so it was a bit longer of an idea. And it wasn't really settling with me. I had like a pilot script that I wrote out, and it just like wasn't really feeling it. I think the idea was like still too like complex. Like you said, it is kind of a messy, you know, it's a messy little premise. Especially because right, Street Wizard Apprentice, the title says one thing, but once you actually see the show, there's a whole nother like depth of what's going on there. Sorry, I'm blanking.
Oh, no worries.
Where did I get from this guy? So
you were talking about why it was, how it, you had this 10-minute script or the pilot, and
all
how
right,
it was messy
you.
And you weren't really liking it.
Right. So I kind of tabled the idea for a little while, and then as a group, Muscular Clown Group, we came back together and we were sort of...
We were all living together at this time, by the way.
Oh, my.
We still live together.
Kyle and I are still roommates.
I have never lived with them.
Melzer has since escaped.
Yeah.
Matt Giordano was also a roommate, and he escaped too, so yeah. We'll see. At some point, you end up living with us if you want to work with us.
Yeah.
I have never lived with you.
You will, though.
You will at some point.
Anyways, so I tabled it because I just wasn't feeling it. Just wasn't clicking, and then as a group we decided like, hey, you know, let's try and do instead of, you know, a bunch of one-off sketches, let's do a series. And so we had, you know, as a group we pitched our, like, individually we tried to pitch, you know, ideas. I pitched the, you know, the Street Wizard idea, and then from there we kind of boiled it down so it was a little more simple, fit into a tighter, you know, 5-minute time frame rather than like a 10-minute time frame or longer, you know, try to make it more digestible and really, I don't know how much to describe on air where, you know, things are visually hard to describe, but the beginning of the show has a serious, we're trying to play it off as a very campy,
Highlander-esque,
it's supposed to be like you're watching a show for action adventure, and then when you get into the show, it becomes more like Always Sunny, you know, wacky hijinks or what have you, And I think that's where when we got together as a group, that really solidified from being something that was like a little too serious to really becoming more of like pure comedy and just sort of a lot of just fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Goofiness.
Also, like, me and Melzer have always been, like, big... I mean, all of us have always been, like, big fantasy and, like...
Oh, for real,
like,
yeah.
You know, like, D&D nerds kind of in that sense, so, like...
Yeah, to answer that question, we're all big nerds.
Yeah, so, like, throwing in, like, things...
We're going
like,
to have to ask you guys to leave.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Why did you tell them?
How we revealed too much.
No.
That's why we have Katie. Katie's, like, nerdy, but, like, also approachable. So we love throwing in like things like just there's an author Jim Butcher, and he writes a series about Harry Dresden, Chicago's only professional wizard, and you know, we kind of like to make little jokes at that and like, you know, just I mean everything that you're influenced from like, you know, the cartoons you watch in you know, you watched as a kid to like the ones you watch now to, you know, the books you read. I mean, we're thrown in this kind of jambalaya pot of, like, fantasy comedy.
I mean, we all love the early, you know, Highlander, Buffy, Power Rangers, like, all those kind of shows. And so when we were thinking of, like, of Street Wizard, we wanted to be a comedy, but we wanted to preserve, at least on some level, all those...
The camp,
all those shows that, like, you know, they took themselves so seriously at the time, but now looking back and just like, oh my
it's
god,
just bizarre,
so silly. Yeah.
I want to ask quickly about the actual making of the show. We talked to a lot of filmmakers on the show about, you know, working with virtually no budget, and that seems to be kind of like the way it is in Chicago. That's part of the filmmaking community is that everybody's working with almost nothing. So I wanted to know what were your strategies, plans, techniques in, you know, doing things like location, actual shooting, the editing, like how did that all come together?
So for locations,
we drove around
definitely,
a lot.
We definitely did not do things the way you're supposed to do them, where you actually like get assigned
permits.
Release and permits and stuff like that. You know, we definitely would just show up at a corner that was like, you know what, this looks ghetto enough, and would just, you know, shoot. Oh my god, there, you know, we'd be shooting on the street and would just have to like, okay, here comes a car, like everybody gets scrambles off the road, hopefully they don't do anything too bad. At one point, like, cops actually did roll up and they're like,
what are you doing?
And we're like, how, we're just, you know, students, quote unquote, filming, you know. Yeah, exactly. Filming, and they were like,
we're here with you too.
All right. Just like kept on going. We were expecting to get stopped at that point. There's one time where we were filming.
Oh, yeah.
In a,
some NFL player came by. I don't remember. The Met kid who was the lead who played
Drake.
Yeah. He actually knew the football player's name, but I did. But he came by and he thought, because at that time my beard was much longer. And I kind of do look like Action Bronson.
Yeah.
And so he thought we were filming something
for Action
Bronson, like one of his like, you know, YouTube videos.
Yeah.
And so we're like, yeah, that's what we were doing.
Wizard.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Cool.
I'm gonna eat this burrito in a street.
Yeah.
Like. Oh yeah. Location wise, very very. You know, we're just using our friends' houses. We're using locations that we probably shouldn't be able to use.
A few theaters, playground theater.
Oh, yes.
Right. So they were awesome about letting us use their space.
You know, so we just made the most happen for free. I don't think we ever paid any location. And there were definitely locations where we should have been paying and or shouldn't have been able to film at all. And then the filmmaking process, we each have between... Myself and Melzer and Matt, we each have like a fair amount of like, you know, cameras and lights and stuff like that. So nothing too fancy. You know, we make it happen with what we got, just like everybody out in the city for sure. You know, I don't know if there's a whole lot, unique to our struggle because I definitely, as you guys were saying, you know, everybody here in Chicago is working with nothing, and that's the way, you know. that's what you got to do. Honestly, the money that comes in at all is, you know, maybe feeds people, you know, for the day, but otherwise you're really making things happen on a $0 budget. And so we had a lot of, you know, film or gear on our own that, you know, we use for like freelance and stuff like that, that we were using for this. And then, you know, Kyle is one of our lead actors. Yeah. We met a great friend, Matt Kidd, who's Drake, and he was willing to be a part of this, you know, totally for free. Just, you know, was interested in being part of something new. I don't think he'd ever done a web series before or anything like that. So he, you know, to him, it was a cool, you know, experience, something new for him to do.
A lot of community. I mean, like Elise and Vanessa, like honestly, like getting involved in just like the comedy scene and the creative scene, you're going to meet people who, you know, oh, this person is really good at costume creating, and they do cosplay, and oh, this person makes chainmail professionally. Yeah. And like, so, you know, it's really about just like making friends and
abusing those
friendships. Yeah.
And you know, to going back to like Chicago being, you know, so low budget. People here, one of the reasons we came to Chicago instead of like LA or New York is partially, at least for me personally, to avoid sort of the massive competition that there is out there when, you know, we're sort of just out of college and, you know, feel like we're still getting our track on point. So, and another reason we came to Chicago is because of the massive improv community, obviously, and the massive comedy community that's here. And, you know,
throw a rock and hit an actor, you know?
You know, we did film, but we also loved comedy. And, you know, so we felt like Chicago was a great, you know, midpoint between that. And I think being in Chicago has been a really unique experience being filmmakers, where so many people here are used to improvising and doing stand-up as their game, and they're already hustling and they're doing it for nothing, and they're going out at, you know, to do stand-up routines like, you know, every week, every night of every week, you know, and they're used to it, to putting that much effort into something that's paying you nothing.
Barely anybody sees. Yeah.
So it's been a really great, and, you know, getting to know the improv community and the people inside of that, and getting them to be a part of our work has been really easy and very fun, because so many people are already so used to being on that such a low level, you know, no budget, you know, minimal or limited, you know, visibility type stuff. So I think being in Chicago has been a boon, definitely, for our abilities and what we're used to doing.
It's definitely a DIY, like, brass tacks kind of work.
Yeah.
You know,
shoulders, man.
Yeah. Yeah, you do, you know, like, that's, everybody here is, like, willing to work and work for the sense of maybe creating something cool. Mm-hmm. And that in itself is really cool, you know, like, different than, you know, LA or New York. You know, it's the idea of working for free, and not only working for free, but like putting in materials and stuff like that, that they giving us stuff, you know, like that kind of stuff really allowed, you know, us to create something that was polished and special.
Absolutely common sentiment that I've heard across all of the people that we've talked to on this show, all the filmmakers and, you know, showrunners and whatnot, is that Chicago is a great place to cut your teeth. It really instills a sense of, like, kind of a punk rock attitude, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you're doing it for yourself, and fuck you if you're going to get in my way. 100%. You know, frankly.
Yeah.
And so it's cool to see that that is persisting with you guys as well.
Yeah. It was interesting when we went to Film Quest, which was the festival that Street Wizard won Best Web Series at, which was cool. When we went to Film Quest, a bunch of the films that we saw were made by people who had budgets that far exceeded the Street Wizard budget. They were all like blown away that we did Street Wizard for what, 500?
So yeah, a lot of people were based out of LA.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I think almost, you know, I don't want to make assumptions, but because we didn't meet everybody at the Film Quest at the festival, but a lot of people that we did meet were in, you know, and a lot of their films were top notch, by the way. But, you know, and obviously, when you're making a sketch comedy web series, the quality of your video versus the quality of somebody who's making a one-off short film, you know, there's a disparity, and you sort of make allowances for that. But regardless, they were always very taken aback by the fact that we had, like, no budget at all. yeah. And another weird thing, and there was a lot of, like, weird little difficulties that we don't experience here in Chicago that are apparently a big deal in L.A., that I wasn't even thinking about, that, like...
SAG actors?
Yeah.
Right, it's not necessarily, like, I think there are a lot of actors that are, it's not that actors aren't willing to do shit, because obviously, in L.A., because obviously there's a lot of hungry people out there, but it's, like, locations, every location ever expects you to pay, like, big money out there, because even like, the hint of a film, they expect it to be something big budget, they expect them to get paid well, so apparently getting locations out in L.A. is, like, super yeah. hard for if you're doing things independently, mm-hmm. whereas here in Chicago it's definitely a
vague bar one. Yeah,
you could just ask yeah. Ask your buddy that lives over on Paulina,
right?
You know, yeah. like, hey, I heard you got a two bedroom, man. Like,
is it a walk up?
This looks like a fancy person lives here.
I want to quickly in the brief amount of time we have left, want to go individually to each of you and ask you an important question to me is. What was the hardest day you had on set? Take a second, oof. Think about it. Because really, as we were just saying, you know, it's about the struggle. It's about really putting in the hard hours, the hard work for possibly no return. And I just want to know individually the hardest day you guys each had on set. I want to start with you, Katie.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I'm new to the group. So I came in on the back end of Street Wizards Apprentice and helped promote it. And then am working on Todd Groban's Going Away Party. And I've got to say, on set, it's not been hard. I've loved every fucking second of it. Working with these guys is a dream, and I love working with them. I'd say the thing that's hard is, like, figuring out how to get everything done that we need to get done and that I have said that I will get done for the things that we're doing while also maintaining a day job and a marriage.
Boom. All right, Drew.
Woof. All right. Hardest moment, day... Just
honest day moment, yeah. Set experience.
So what the Street Wizard was a first. I just want to say for people that are looking to make films and you know are independently minded, it takes a long time. It takes a super super long time. This was a stupid ass idea that we were like. Hey, let's make a shitty web series. It can be about a hobo wizard.
Is that your inner monologue?
That's my internal voice. And you know, we thought we were gonna get it done in like, you know, a year. It took us 2 years. Mm-hmm. You know, and a year was like, huh, it'll take. Oh yeah, a year. And oh man. No. So you know, your idea may seem small to you, and when it starts to take up forever, don't get discouraged. Power through it, you know, you will see the light at the end of the tunnel, and then you will feel very rewarded when you finally get there. My hardest experience on set may have actually been the very first day of our production, because I had actually just started a new job. I think this is actually going to go really very similar to what Katie is saying, where I had just started a new job, and it was a hell of a job. It was kicking my ass hardcore. And that same week that I started the new job, we'd slated to the weekend we were going to start filming. Mm-hmm. And we were going to start with the show that I, you know, wrote myself, the episode that I wrote. It was the first episode of the series, and I had no time to prepare. I basically just kept on shirking preparation for the episode, you know, because of my job, and then on the day of was just like freaking out internally. It ended up being fine. Like the day went fine. Nobody even was aware that I was raging internally. I tried to keep it under wraps, but I was like hating it the whole day. And then at the end of the day, it was fine, and you know, it turned out great. Obviously, there's things I probably would have done differently, but like, you know, I can't even recall what they are now. It's been so long, so. You know, rather than getting butthurt about it and letting it affect the shoot, you know, I just tried to stay as cool as I could. But, man, yeah, that was a hectic time.
Mm-hmm. All right, Kyle.
On the episode Pixie Dust, just that entire shoot with the balloons was quite possibly the worst thing. And that day, we had gone out and to get the balloons.
Oh,
and
my God.
It was so hot. It was like one of the hottest days of summer of that year, which was, again, 2 years ago. I had fallen asleep in the car while moving the car. And so, like, I ended up disappearing for, like, an hour.
I remember
I think Drew would say that this is his least favorite experience.
Yeah, I think I forgot about this experience. That's how bad this was.
So
freaking out.
We have an hour of, like, dead time, my fault. And then I come back, and I'm just so flustered. I can't get my lines correct, and the balloons won't stay straight where we have the, like, right. faces on because we have to cut off all the fans, everything, so it's roasting in this room so that the fans aren't moving the balloons, and the balloons are still moving, and we can't get the shot,
it just took
forever.
They just got those smug looks on their faces.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Oh, my God. Oh, definitely.
It is.
They're taunting
people
us.
Talk about working with kids and dogs, man. Balloons. The worst.
And Kyle.
Yeah, me. Oh, yeah, me too.
All right, I'm going to play a little bit of the intro to the Street sweet. Wizards Apprentice episode 1 so people can kind of hear
it. For centuries, the wizard Malfazar protected medieval Chicago from magical terrors until he was cursed by a devious witch to appear as nothing more than a common beggar. Malfazar was stripped of everything, condemned to social oblivion, until he met a simple drug dealer with the blood of warlocks in his veins.
A wizard will make your life a living space!
Now, Drake and Malfazar joined forces to fight back the monsters of magic and break the curse bestowed by the evil witch Eldra.
Oh my God. It's actually doing really. I'm following it.
Yeah, no.
Just the audio.
Do you think that's any good? Do you think that series is any good? I don't know.
No, I'm actually really impressed.
Yeah.
Melzer, good job, man. Like
sound, yeah,
the sound quality.
The Street Wizards Apprentice.
I love it. All right, so the Street Wizards Apprentice. The entire series is up now on YouTube, and you can watch every episode as well as everything that Muscular Clown does.
Yeah.
Where can they find you on social media? Facebook, Twitter, Instagram?
All three.
Yeah, all three. Muscular Clown, I think. Muscular Clown, all one word, is our handle on Twitter and Instagram. And then on Facebook, just search Muscular Clown. And I guess in the spring, look for the full series of Todd Groban's Going Away Party. We just received funding from Channel Flux for a whole series. So we have actual money to work on something. It's going to be great.
Let's see where it goes. Thank you so much,
yes.
Katie, Drew, and Kyle of Muscular Clown. If that intro to that, I've watched this video like a few times. So it's like I want to pick out the things that I really, really love about it. And every time I see that intro, it makes me laugh. Like, I think
awesome.
It's just so funny.
Awesome.
Great way to
thank
get into
you,
it.
Thank you.
So if that does not get you watching The Street Wizards Apprentice, I literally don't know what to tell you. It's a Chicago set, fantasy, comedy, romp with drugs and
balloons.
Balloons.
Yeah.
Boxes that are bigger than they seem on the inside.
Yes.
All that good stuff. Thank you so much for coming on the
thank
show.
Thank you,
guys.
Thank you so much.
All right. We will be back in just a little bit. We are going to be talking a little bit of Cinepocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
Get an update on that. But you got to stick around for it. This is NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus, your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And we'll see you in just a moment. Back again, you're listening to NoCo Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and all around the world. I'm Tom Hush.
And I'm Connor Cornelius.
And right now we're going to get into our kind of mixed bag segment where we look around and see what's happening in the city of Chicago and maybe preview some things, review some things, all that good stuff. Joining us right now is Raul Benitez, film programmer from the Comfort Film over at Comfort Station. You know him. He was on the show pretty recently, and we're so glad to have you back, Raul.
Thanks.
And joining him is Mike Vanderbilt. He's the assistant editor at Daily Grindhouse, which is a great site covering all things gooey, gory, and gushy. Thank you so much. That's our thing. And he also has bylines everywhere. You can catch him on the AV Club. Just honestly, look him up, follow him on Twitter, and you just got to follow what this guy is doing. Thank you so much for coming on the show, Mike.
Thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.
Anytime. So what we want to talk about
here... That's like inviting a vampire into your house, you know. Because I can talk.
What we are going to be talking about here is the Cinepocalypse Film Festival. It's currently going on at the Music Box. You all know the Music Box, one of the best theaters here in Chicago, one of the most historic theaters here in Chicago. And we actually talked to Josh Goldblum, the artistic director of the Cinepocalypse Film Festival last week. But we wanted to get a couple of people who have been attending the festival, seeing what's being played, seeing what's going on, and telling us what they think. So Raul and Mike are here to help us do that. So let's start with you, Raul. What have been your first impressions of the Cinepocalypse Film Festival?
Well, you know, I always said it's tough to do a film festival, especially when you're starting out new. But, you know, they've done this before. This used to be the Bruce Campbell.
Yeah, this is the first year they're doing it at the Music Box Theater, but they did it at the out in Rosemont at the Movico out there. And it was sort of attached to Wizard World. I want to say it was going on that weekend. And I went last year. And had a really good time at that one. Saw some really great films. Saw one of my favorite films of the year last year at that one. I Am Not a Serial Killer, which did you guys check that one out?
Oh, I wish.
I know you guys are Romero fans. If you're fans of Martin, like it's in that vein.
Yes.
But I liked it more than Martin. I don't know. But it's a great flick, and that was something I saw at the Bruce Campbell Horror Film Festival. So they, I'm sure, as Josh Goldblum told you, that Bruce is busy, mm-hmm. and we all know Bruce is busy. And they wanted to get it into the city.
Yeah, and they have already like a background of like running a festival. So
I actually met Josh Goldblum for the first time down at
Fantastic Fest
down in Austin, which you can see that this festival is sort of influenced by, I would say.
Yeah, and he was already talking about this festival when we saw him at Fantastic Fest last year.
He was talking about making it happen.
It happen, and he was looking for venues in the city, and he was asking for advice.
Yes, he was. And we were some of the Chicago guys down there. And really, I mean, if you're going to do a music festival in Chicago proper, or not music, a film festival in Chicago proper, you got to do it at the Music Box, right?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Yeah, so I was kind of like, you know, I was curious to see how it was going to come off. And so far, so good. Obviously, you know, the Music Box only has two theaters, so they could do only like one thing at a time for the most part.
Yeah, like I mean, the only really other big film festival I've experienced going to is Fantastic Fest, and they basically have the whole Alamo Draft House in Austin mm-hmm. playing movies every hour on the hour down there. So they don't have that, but you do have, I mean, you have that aura, you have that, you know, feel of being in the Music Box theater.
Right. And you know, they have scheduled a lot, like 61 films, I think.
Wow.
Total?
It's impressive.
They're doing a full week, correct?
Yeah, they're doing a full week, Thursday to Thursday. You know, obviously the opening night they had only one film, which was Sweet Virginia. Mm-hmm. But then after that, like yesterday, I think they had like something like six, seven films in a row.
Yeah.
For the most part. So they're pretty much doing it that way all week till Thursday.
And this is its inaugural year, so it's, you know, not going to be able to hold it necessarily to the standards of Fantastic Fest.
Yeah, obviously. No, we're not.
That's the reason we all got press passes from Daily Grindhouse.
All right, so the film that you first mentioned that they opened with, Sweet Virginia, that's got Jon Bernthal in it from The Walking Dead and The Punisher as well. Did you both see it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes, we both saw it.
What were some of your thoughts?
Raleigh, you want to go on?
I thought it was kind of... a slow opening movie for a festival.
Interesting.
Berthold plays this guy who's runs a motel. He's like an ex-rodeo guy. He kind of plays it off as like he's his body's kind of physically damaged by being in the rodeo, and he got this motel from his brother, and through it he befriends. There's like two subplots going, because there's like a subplot with him and a woman that he has kind of like this affair with, and then
there's kind of a murder.
Yeah, like, there's like a murder in the beginning of the movie.
What do I say? It's like a best plan's gone awry. Okay. It's like that kind of thriller where somebody sets something in motion, and then everything goes wrong.
Okay.
Yeah, like kind of a Murphy's Law kind of thing. I seem to enjoy it a lot more than a lot of the other people coming out of theater, even though when it started, I was kind of like, all right, I've seen this story before. Like, but...
Yeah, and it was a little predictable. Like, I kind of predicted...
Yeah.
But
the performances, I think, are so good. Not only do you have John Bernthal,
yes,
but you have Christopher Abbott, who the whole movie I'm like, where do I recognize him from? And I realize I recognize him from Girls, and he's good as kind of this like just oddball mushmouth miscreant. And Rosemary DeWitt is in it, who I always like because I liked her as Midge on Mad Men, and that's I just learned her name because I just every time I say that's Midge,
yeah.
And she's good in Imogene Poots.
Yeah, Imogene Poots.
Who I liked in Green Room, which was one of my favorites.
That was one of my favorites of Fantastic Fest.
And it's kind of in that Green Room vein, I mean, visually. Like I said, though, but I think something like I had to learn going to film festivals was that you kind of expect everything to just blow you out of the water immediately. And all these movies just be like how people are online. It's like everything's amazing or everything's garbage. Like you're just going to get some nice middle of the road. Yeah. Like if I caught this one on... you know, cable in the middle of the night. I've been like,
I felt like it really was like a late night cable movie.
Oh yeah.
Oh, so this is like definitely a rent. Like if this gets maybe a Redbox or something.
Oh yeah,
definitely.
I definitely think if you're a fan of Bernthal, if you're a fan of Christopher Abbott, or if you're a fan of Midge from Mad Men, that there's nothing not to like about it. But I think when you go to see stuff at a festival, there's this preconceived notion that you're just going to be blown away. Like it's amazing.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of movies that are just really good.
Yeah. Was there a story behind why they chose Sweet Virginia? Because it's kind of strange to open up with
a
slow movie.
I don't know the story.
Just a little inside baseball, I guess. Like they had, you know, they just were debating on which ones to get, and some films they didn't get that they wanted. And I think if I were to make my own assumptions, it's because you got some serious star power in it. Like,
yeah, John Bernthal, people are just going to recognize him.
Yeah, and some of the other movies, like if you look at the rest of what's coming up in a festival, you don't want to put that right up front, you know? You don't want to open with the biggest hit. You want to put that somewhere in the middle of the set.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
So another one that I love the title of this, Attack of the Adult Babies, which, Connor, you mentioned that they need to put a qualifier in there.
Yeah, it needs to be Attack of the Adult Human Babies.
Because Attack of the Adult Shark Babies,
yeah,
I'd watch that.
Sounds okay. Yeah. I'm down with that.
Okay. Sci-fi original, please give us a call. We can make this happen for you. All right.
Greenlit.
Yeah, I saw that movie last night.
Was that the midnight movie?
That was the midnight movie.
Because that's the kind of movie that can only be shown at midnight, I think.
Yeah, and it has this concept of like things going wrong, because it turns out that the movie opens with this family playing a board game, and then these two guys come in and they kind of like heist them, but then they tell them, hey, we want you guys to steal something for us from this building, and if you don't steal it, we're going to kill your father. And so they send, like, the family, which is, like...
sounds a lot more serious than I was expecting from a movie called Attack of the Adult Babies.
It's like, the two guys that heist them are, like, goofy and dumb.
Okay.
And they don't know how to use their guns. But they convince this family to go steal some plans from this mansion. But it turns out that the mansion is, like, this weird fetish club where adult men...
Where is it? Have I been there?
Night was in England, apparently.
No, I don't get overseas that
But these guys...
Was it out in a bird? It wasn't out in like a...
No, it was out like in the countryside, right, in a big like English manor. And at this manor, there's these guys that... It's like a fetish club, and they make them wear these diapers. They wear diapers, and they act like babies. And they have each one of them has a nurse that has... they're wearing like these vinyl nurse outfits.
I'm interested.
Yeah, with the thigh highs, and then you know they like.
Oh, you just hit.
Yeah, and then they have to like change their diapers, and they soil. You know, there's like a headmistress. You just tell them you got to treat them like babies, and they're gonna soil themselves. You got to change them, and there was a big point of like the soiling of the diapers, and there's like a running gag of like somebody has like shit on their face from one of the diapers because they wiped a rag on their face.
So it's highbrow.
Yeah. Really highbrow. And like the director of the fetish place, you only see his hands at most of the movie, and he's like typing up.
Like Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget?
And but he's watching porn most of the time and watching the security cameras. And then he just goes back to porn, and his desk is full of, like, Kleenex.
So did you like this one?
Yeah. I actually enjoyed it, considering it's such late at night. There's a lot going on. And there's, like, a lot of horror and, like, blood. And then there's a weird sci-fi element to it. So if you get a chance to find it anywhere, I would highly recommend seeing it.
I missed this one, but I know that my writer and lead singer in my band, Modern Day Rippers, Germ T. Ripper. I mean, everybody in Chicago, anybody, somebody listening to this podcast knows who he is because he's just one
good
of those
old
guys.
Germ.
Everybody knows Germ. Well, when I try to assign out movies as the assistant editor for people to review, I try to find like what writer on staff has the most chance of enjoying this. And that was, this is Germ. And you said you saw him in the theater last night?
Yeah, he enjoyed the hell out of it.
I don't know if you need to read a review at this point.
You know, the music box is huge, and there's like maybe 20, 30 people left for that screening.
Sure.
And he's the only one that's like laughing.
Just howling. I can hear him in my
so
head.
So loud. I like everything. And I'm like, yep, he's loving this every moment. But yeah, I saw that. That was the indie movie. I did not see Tragedy Girls.
That's a favorite of the festival. Everybody seems to be digging that one.
Yeah, I mean, that was one of those that I definitely saw a lot of coverage of ahead of time. Because, I mean, I heard Sweet Virginia mainly because of John Bernthal.
Yeah.
I know that they're doing Suspiria, which we'll get to. But the only other movie, Near Dark was another one that got a lot of coverage. But then Tragedy Girls, like, this was supposed to be this hit that was going to come out of this festival.
They're I know they're promoting it pretty heavy.
Yeah.
It's been rolling out to a couple different. I think it's played just about every festival. I don't think it didn't play Fantastic.
No, it
Fest.
Did not. But going into the theater last night, everybody that I talked to really loved Tragedy Girls.
Yeah, everybody. We have a writer, Rob Dean, who saw it at one or the other. He saw it he's an Austin guy, and he really dug it too. Yeah, I tend not to do a lot of research on movies coming up to festivals because I genuinely like to be surprised because in this day and age, and Daily Grindhouse is part of the problem when it comes to this, like you don't get to be surprised. You know, everything from the time it's being cast to who bought the script and everything. And I remember reading Fangoria, you know, magazine as a kid, and like you'd be looking through the list of upcoming movies, and you'd be like, oh my God, there's another Friday the 13th coming out. Like, and it was just this big shock, and you don't have that anymore. So like something like Green Room, which I saw down at Fantastic Fest, I remember I was bent out of shape because everybody was going into the secret screening, which turned out to be Crimson Peak, which really doesn't sound like my wheelhouse. I still haven't seen it, but I said, all right, I'll go Green Room. Okay, Punk Rockers. All right, cool. And that was my favorite film of the festival.
I know both Connor and I absolutely love Green Room.
Yeah.
And I thought that was going to be a bigger hit than it was, honestly.
Yeah.
Give it time.
Yeah. It's going to grow on people.
I can live with Green Room being one of those movies that you pass on to people.
Yeah.
That's what I really like about Cinepocalypse is that it seems that their approach to it was like, let's book a lot of movies that maybe won't be like it's to each their own.
Sure.
Who knows what people are going to think is amazing and what they're going to think is not so great. But I feel like a lot of these movies will just be ones that are good enough that you want to pass on, like Attack of the Adult Babies.
Oh, yeah.
How do you,
true cult hits, like you used to have in the age of VHS and everything, where like you'd catch it on cable one night and you'd have to find out what movie this is, and then you'd have to tape it, or you'd have to go order it from a bootleg magazine, and then you're like, oh, you have to bring it to your friend's house, and you're like, oh, yeah, I got to sit down and watch this thing. Well, that's what I like about Cinepox is that they really are truly leaning heavily on genre films, because even Fantastic Fest kind of has moved away, and they've gotten
they've shown some straight ahead stuff,
like straight ahead Hollywood stuff, because they're a big festival, they can get that, and I dig that. But I mean, for someone who runs a site called Daily Grindhouse, like this is our bread and butter.
Yeah,
this is the kind of stuff that I loved growing up. This is the kind of stuff I still love now, and one of the reasons I think we're a perfect site to be covering it is that. And it's a perfect festival for us. We're a perfect site to be covering it because we're not just pigeonholed by horror. We're not pigeonholed by Hollywood. We are a genre site. So we can get horror, action, sci-fi. We can write about any of that. It never feels like we're stretching too hard, I don't think.
Yeah, I want to ask Raul, what did you get from like the audience, like not even for a specific movie, when you were going in? What was the energy like at the music box?
I thought
box
there was
a
lot. I think there's definitely a lot of genre film fans there, and there was a lot of people that didn't just buy a ticket for a single. I think a lot of people had badges, so it looks like
they
had,
went for it.
So there's people that went for it and got the whole deal. Like, I think the badges were $100 or something, $150.
Which isn't bad for a week
pretty,
long of film.
Pretty reasonable prices.
That's one night at the AMC if you bring a date.
So there was a lot of people that I noticed that had badges. There wasn't too many people that I noticed that, you know, bought a ticket at the box office just for one film or whatever. The crowd during the Bigfoot
Primal movie, Rage.
Primal Rage. They were really into it. Really into it. So I definitely felt like this is a knowledgeable audience that they had, at least for Primal Rage.
I have noticed that within, like, I hesitate to use the word community, because community is usually just another word for clique. But when you're dealing with, like, people who love film and people who love genres of film in particular, there is a sense of that community where you need to go out, like in the old days with in indie rock bands, like you have to go out and support. You have to go out and spend the money at this festival to ensure that you get festivals like this. Like, yeah, it's so easy to watch anything on Amazon Prime, Netflix, Shudder. I subscribe to most of them and steal the rest of them. And I can watch whatever I want, whenever I want. But, like, something about going to the theater and...
Yeah,
that going and talking to people, the movie. Like, what did you think of it?
Yeah, and I think it's great about a festival like this is that you get to talk to people that have similar interests and they're as knowledgeable or more knowledgeable than you are. You could just pick their brain and talk to them about it, and stuff like that. So I felt that this festival does have that feel. Yes.
Yeah, it's not like it's genre based. This Cinepocalypse, right? It's like science fiction, horror, comedy, action, but it all has to have some sort of bearing on like a horrific experience, right?
Yeah.
Not a horrific experience in terms of like it's going to be a bad one.
It exists on the outskirts, even though I mean, if you look at modern Hollywood cinema, so much of modern Hollywood cinema is basically a budget B movies.
Well, yeah. I mean, isn't. Like superhero films, kind of genre films.
Superheroes are totally genre films.
Yeah. And they're like the big stuff now.
Yeah, that's like in Star Wars. We could fall down that rabbit hole easy about how Star Wars changed all that.
Yep.
But yeah, it's all genre based in that it's like every film falls into a genre, but
heavy genre.
Heavy. Yeah. It's extreme. You know it. And usually, like you said, horrific.
Yeah.
Let's say 90% of them. I mean, Sweet Virginia was pretty horrific. There was some good violence in it. Yeah.
One thing I'm really excited about is the fact that in this big genre celebration is that they're including Foxy Brown and I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka, which are two big hallmarks of the what is commonly referred to as the blaxploitation genre. And especially Foxy Brown, Pam Grier, one of the legends.
I would say one of the top five blaxploitation films of all time.
But it does make me wonder, and I'm going to go down a little bit of a social aspect here because movies and society really interest me. Do those types of movies still have a place in like film festivals? Because although they're celebrated as a important part of filmmaking then, how do we view things like Foxy Brown and I'm Gonna Get You, Sucka now in 2017?
Oosh, that is heavy.
I know, right?
I think it's an important question to ask because the blaxploitation subgenre, it was great because you did see this burst of black filmmakers coming out and making tales for black audiences. That's not to say that only black audiences can like that. It's not to say that only white audiences can watch movies with white characters that tell a white story. I mean, film is universal. I'm older than some, I'm 37, and I think that if somebody were, I mean, if you're asking like that, are these movies out of place? Are they out of time? I think that more young people in general and young film fans need to be able to watch a movie from a different era and accept that, okay, things were different back then. We've sort of progressed. We haven't progressed as much as we probably should have in 30, 40, 50, 100 years. but to take yourself out and look at this as a product of its time and enjoy the good things about it, because I don't want to live in a world where film classes aren't showing Triumph of the Will to explain how propaganda works, or showing Birth of the Nation because, was that Cecil B. DeMille?
Yeah.
Figured out all these filmmaking tricks, even though it's, you know, it's propaganda for the South.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's still kind of like black exploitation films being made. I mean, we had, well, what do we have? Like, I was just looking it up. Black Dynamite was a
Which was in a vein, it was a tribute. And I always said one of my favorite movies of the past 10 years that nobody likes, and I wrote a big piece in the AV Club about it, was Red Tails, which George Lucas produced.
Yeah.
What about the Tuskegee Airmen? If you look at it, it's basically a black exploitation flick for the modern age. It's an all-black cast, black director, you know, and it's telling an action-adventure tale about World War II pilots that happen to be, you know, black.
Yeah, and I'm glad that they're at least willing to say, we're going to put this out here, and especially, I mean, I love Pam Grier. She's just, it would be a shame to think that we wouldn't get to see her work in the 70s and 80s. Because the attitudes might be a little outdated,
but I will say I don't think they're as outdated as you think. I mean, they may be dated in the fact that look at the fashions, look at the styles that the people are wearing, and some of the language that's used. But
it is a powerful black woman in a starring role, which at the time was
you didn't see
big.
It.
Yeah,
you didn't.
Just black actors in starring roles, like you know, doing things on their own with no help with anybody else. I think those are important films to show, and I think they're still important today.
And one of the biggest, I mean, one of the big directors, well, not one of the big directors, but a favorite of that era is Larry Cohen, who there's a documentary about him, and there's a great interview with Fred Williamson in the which is absolutely, like, it's worth the price of admission for King Cohen to watch this this back and forth between Larry Cohen and Fred Williamson, who was in Black Caesar, also probably one of the top five black exploitation films.
I wish they would have just brought him and then have Larry Cohen talk.
I'm surprised that they did it,
because
honestly,
that would be great.
Well, for all the foibles of those black exploitation movies and for Foxy Brown, it does, kind of to your point, it does help you. You can look back and take the good things out of it, and it does kind of help you, I find, reflect on where we are now socially, as you like mentioned, Tom.
It's a cliche, but those who don't learn history are condemned to repeat it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We've got a lot of guests coming as well. I think you mentioned Larry Cohen.
Larry Cohen's going to be here. I met him down in Fantastic Fest. He's worth the price just to go see him talk. I would watch Larry Cohen like a one man show with him just telling tales about making movies. Like, because the film's great. It was one of my favorites of Fantastic Fest. It's a great documentary. For anybody who loves Larry Cohen, or even somebody who only knows a little bit, like, I learned a lot that I didn't know about him.
Yeah, I learned a lot too, and I didn't know much. I mean, we have a friend that's a super big fan.
I'm going to give a plug for one of my favorite Daily Grindhouse writers, Mr. Movie Murder Matt on Twitter, Matt Wedge, the biggest Larry Cohen expert out there. And we actually got him, the two of them, in a room together. It was like my breakfast with Blassie when Andy Kaufman interviewed Classy Freddie Blassie. It was great.
Yeah. So then King Cohen's a really good documentary. I enjoyed it a lot. I think that's one to definitely see coming up.
Yeah, so he'll be here.
And he'll be here with
excellent.
And you've got a ton of other guests as well.
Yeah.
Joe Carnahan.
Eric Roberts, which I think is hilarious that they're doing. Eric Roberts is the fucking man. That's
well,
the podcast.
That, right? I wrote that. Doug Tilley is he's a friend of Daily Grindhouse. He's been a friend of the site before I got involved. And I actually started listening to his podcast, and I wrote it up for AV Club. I write the Podmas beat. Mm-hmm. If you have any podcasts for me to listen to, tweet them at me. Let me find them. And it's a show just dedicated to the films of Eric Roberts, and they track him down, and him and his co-host and a guest. And I kind of watched it happen on Twitter, where all of a sudden Eric Roberts was liking their tweets. All of a sudden Eric Roberts was following them. And then all of a sudden, you know, they're interviewing Eric Roberts at Cinepocalypse.
Oh, God. Well, what a meeting of the minds. And I'm trying to think of, I mean, Eric Roberts has been in...
He's the crime boss in The Dark Knight.
Yeah, that was the first time I was like, wait, who is this guy? Like, I've seen him. I know him, but that was how I got into him. What was? Do you guys remember the first Eric Roberts?
Oh, geez, the first time where I noticed who Eric Roberts was. Oh, that's a good question. But I really liked him. He was on, I want to say, the second to last season of Justified. He showed up in there for a minute. He's in Larry Cohen's The Ambulance, which is why he's here, which is showing Sunday night, I believe, after the Larry Cohen documentary. And I remember I knew who he was. Well, it was at, Pulp of Greenwich Village. I don't think that was first time I saw him.
He came on my radar in a Doctor Who movie because he plays the Master.
Wait, shit, he's the Master?
Yeah, in the Doctor Who movie, was it 1992, 91?
Really?
Yeah, when they tried to bring it back. A little bit.
Yeah,
I don't remember that.
Was it Paul? God, I can't even. I know exactly the one you're talking about. And that was, they were like, oh, we're going to bring it back. And then it didn't work. And then they had to wait until 2005.
Mm. Yes.
Eric Roberts was just always one of those faces that you saw on cable. And he was always kind of in trashier B-level movies. And then you're surprised to find out that he's Julia Roberts' brother.
Just to make sure that I was right. Yes. He plays the Master. In the Doctor Who movie on Fox.
Oh my God! When they tried to bring Doctor Who to America for the first,
I don't remember that. That's an interesting.
I think they all kind of wish that no.
He also So I do a monthly series where we show Lifetime movies with Katie Reif
from the AV Club.
So we showed the movie that he's in called Stalked by My Doctor, which is a Lifetime movie. Where he plays a doctor that falls in love with one of the patients that he saves. And it's like super creepy and awesome. And everybody should go see that movie.
I love how descriptive Hallmark movie titles always are.
Yeah. Or Lifetime movies.
Yeah, Lifetime. Stalked by my. Yeah. Or Lifetime, Hallmark.
And actually, there's a part two, and Eric Roberts is in the second part as well.
Stalked by My Doctor, part two.
Yeah.
Debarred or whatever.
It's in Mexico. Because at the end of the story,
he escapes to Mexico.
It's
a nice
great
change of location. That works for me.
Well, Eric. I mean, his like a IMDb page is like humongous, right?
I'm looking at Eric Roberts because I really remembered him from the Best of the Best movie.
Oh yeah,
yeah, which was an '80s actioner that was on cable incessantly.
He pretty much doesn't say no to any gig.
Well, you know what? And it's funny. It's something worth talking about for just a minute. One of my favorite podcasts is the Brett Easton Ellis podcast, and he talks to a lot of filmmakers on there. And one of the points that comes up quite a bit is how hard it is to be a working actor in Hollywood. You think that. All right, you do one movie, one gig. You got money. All right, now you're a movie star. It's like, no, you have to make 5-6 movies a year. And I think it seems like it's gotten easier to do with video on demand and stuff where you'll see Samuel L. Jackson will have 6 movies come out in a year. Mm-hmm. And one of them's Kong Skull Island, this major release. And then he's in some nonsense direct-to-video thing. Yeah. Where he's probably in it for 3 minutes, probably paid him for 2 days, but his face is the biggest one on the box cover.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And, I mean, that seems to be where, apart from film festivals, genre film is really thriving on video on demand.
Absolutely.
It's a place where you can just find things, and it's...
Well, there's so many genre, film streaming channels now.
Yeah.
And I think, a lot of it goes back to that old thing. I mean, if you look at the Sam Raimi and Bruce Campbell and the gang from Evil Dead, they really never wanted to make horror movies. They were more into Three Stooges style comedy. But they knew in 1980 when they started, or 79 when they started shooting Evil Dead, that, horror, when they went to the doctor's offices to collect investments, they're like, well, you're going to get a return on this one because it's going to play to drive-ins and then,
home
video. Yeah.
Because
they're cheap to produce.
Yeah.
And people like horror. People always liked horror. People always talk about horror coming back. It's like, horror's always been
there. It's never leaves, really.
No.
People have always wanted it to be good, I think, is the only thing.
Yeah. You have long stretches where, but there's always, you can always find one good one. And it gets harder with all the streaming stuff.
100%. All right. We just have a little bit of time left. So if I may, I'm going to throw out this question. If you guys want to pick one movie, just one movie, if people are going to go to Cinepocalypse for one day, what movie do they go see?
Do you want me to go first?
You go first.
Hagasusa.
Now, that was that one about?
Bar None. So that's the witch movie, period piece, about a woman who they started out where she's a child with a mother, and they live isolated, and then it forwards to her as an adult, and she's kind of like... getting turned into a witch, and it's really like period PC, and it's I forgot what where they made that movie. I think it was gosh, I can't remember now. It was like Dutch or from Belgium.
And it is worth noting that Hagazusa plays today.
Yeah, it's like today.
In like 10 minutes.
All right, we got to wrap this up. Let's go.
Hurry up. But that, I mean, you asked me which one I go see.
That's true.
The one I go
see. That is true.
But, you know, The Ambulance, I think that's a repertoire screening is showing later on this week.
That's Sunday night. That's definitely Sunday night.
Yes, 35 millimeter. That's okay. One definitely to go see. Rarely screened. And that's also a Coen film.
I'm going to cheat because the only one I've seen that I can honestly recommend that if you're a film fan, like, you got to see King Coen. I think that's a great documentary. Mm-hmm. But what I'm excited about, which I haven't seen, is Mohawk, which plays Tuesday night. And it looks like it's kind of a Native American horror movie set in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. I dig Native American mythology and stuff like that, so that sounds really cool. And the one that everybody's telling me that I'm going to dig, knowing my taste, is Low Life, which sounds like Tarantino exploitation, like like in the vein of like Go and 2 Days in the Valley and that kind of glut of fast-talking hitman movies that came out in the late 90s. But I hear it's actually very good the same time.
Very good.
Yeah, really quick. Like, I think Veronica is one to see. It's a Spanish film made by the guy that did the Rec movies, the REC.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. What was his name?
That's exciting.
Paco Plaza.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
And then I think that one's one. And then they're going to show Apple Cart on Tuesday, which they showed at Fantastic Fest. But this one, it's like a new cut.
Worth noting just for a minute, we saw the Apple Cart with Barbara Crampton, who's also going to be here.
She's a juror.
She is a juror. I wrote a relatively positive review of it because I did see that there were flaws in the editing and like continuity and stuff. But overall, I thought it was effective and fun. And Barbara Crampton's very funny, and you normally don't get to see her play funny. And the director actually went back and recut it.
Really?
I'd be interested to see if it fares any better.
Yeah, I'm interested to see.
There was a lot of the special effects in it were great. A lot of good gooey, gory practical effects, the kind of thing we dig at Daily Grindhouse.
Yeah, so that's another one that I would recommend see later on this week is Apple Cart.
And we'll put a plug in for Katie's AV Club showing of Beyond the Room, which is a very like guy shot like for nothing. Like people are comparing it to The Room, just this DIY, what do you say? Mostly in 93, but completed in 2007. So if you saw Dangerous Men, which was a film that screened down at Fantastic Fest a couple years back, it's in that vein. Just this guy made a movie, and now he's like a lawyer. And you can like buy copies of it. Like, you have to email him, and he sends
you.
You
still got a Hotmail.
Yeah, exactly. But that one, I love stuff like that. I love just stuff that seems like it comes from another dimension.
Well, it just goes to show that this is a fantastically programmed festival. So much good stuff to see. So, I mean, how do you say it? Hagazusa?
Yes, Hagazusa.
I'm not even going to try.
I mean, it's too bad that's playing today, but that's my thing. Like, I want to see that. There's so many things I want to see.
It's coming out on VOD.
Well, there you go.
I don't know when, though, but they did mention that.
So if people can't find – if you can't see it at the festival, find it on VOD. Yes. These are big recommendations. They're going to be out there. VOD is where – apart from film festivals, VOD is where genre is living right now.
That's true. Absolutely.
And we've got that AV Club Presents Beyond the Room. And that you said that's with Katie Reif?
Katie like brokered that deal to like get it. Like,
really?
She used to work with Everything is Terrible, and so she was aware of this movie for years just from going through, you know, these old VHSs. And she tracked the guy down and – you know, made it happen. Yeah.
All right. So definitely lots of stuff to see. You can find the entire list of what's playing at Cinepocalypse at the Music Box over at www.musicboxtheater.com. Thank you so much, Raul and Mike. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me. It was my pleasure.
Raul,
I'd love to come back if, you know, I can find parking.
Oh, yeah. We've always got you. Raul Benitez, you can find out all about Comfort Film. You're on Facebook. You're on Instagram.
Yes.
Connor and I have been to Comfort Film. It's such a great experience.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys coming out to see those.
Oh, seriously.
Absolutely.
Project Nightmare was... it was objectively terrible, and I loved literally every second of it.
That was Paul's from Daily Grindhouse. Actually, he put that one
Yeah,
on.
Paul, yeah.
That's the series that Daily Grindhouse actually loosely sponsors.
We gave you a bunch of pins.
And The Brain. That was also Daily
Grindhouse,
right?
It was
Daily
Grindhouse, right? All those are sponsored by the Daily Grindhouse.
And, you know, you guys have got so much more. I know you've got the Chicago Ethnographic Film Festival.
That was a couple, that's already past couple weeks ago. But
we got big stuff coming up.
We got stuff coming with Simfest.
Yes.
The big one is a David Bowie documentary on Saturday, which is going to get a big turnout, and I don't know how they gave it to us.
Nice.
And apparently the director's flying in from England. So, yeah, I think we're going to have if you guys want to make it to that, it's free. And I heard the documentary is excellent. I haven't screened it yet, but I did get a screener. That would be one to watch showing at our – we're also the only free venue for SimFest.
Which is important, and that's what I really love about Comfort Film is that just by virtue of being free, it opens it up to so many more viewings and so many great more great conversations and people that you might have never have met otherwise.
Right.
So definitely follow them on Facebook. Follow them everywhere. Instagram. You have a great Instagram. And you'll probably see Connor and I at least at a few of them because we love it there. It's a lot of fun. Daily Grindhouse, Mike Vanderbilt.
www.dailygrindhouse.com. Find us on Twitter at Daily Grindhouse. Find us on Facebook at Daily Grindhouse. Find me. Follow me. I'll follow anybody on Twitter. It's cool. I follow.
He was dumb enough to follow me, and I just pretty much post nihilism and shameless plugs.
All mine is all shameless. If you're not going to promote yourself, no one else is going to do it. I've been telling people that for years. But yeah, you can find me at Mike Vanderbilt on Twitter. You can read me at AV Club and the Podmas. Sometimes a consequence of sound. I had a piece in a reader once. I don't know. Find my band Modern Day Rippers. I got my or any of my numerous podcasts, but we'll talk about it. Again, thanks for having me on there. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime. Literally, guys, just hit us up anytime. We love talking film with you. And thanks for closing out the show with us.
Oh, it was our pleasure.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, have a good day, everybody. This has been No Coast Cinema here on WGN Plus. We are your guide to cinema here in the city of Chicago and, frankly, all around the world. I'm Tom Hush.
And, frankly, I'm Connor Cornelius.
We'll see you guys next week.